Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. One of the purpose of i'tikaf is to search for the Laylatul Qadr. Together with that, when we gather together, then our ambition also is to rectify our connection with Allah Ta'ala. When you say rectify, that means there's something to be corrected. And when there's something to be corrected, then that means something wrong. So we need to know what is wrong so that we may be able to correct ourselves. If a person comes with this frame of mind that I know everything and I don't need correction, or it is my own personal achievement, my own kamal and my own achievement, then that person is in a loss. But he's coming with a frame of mind. He's coming with thinking that he's got some achievement, some greatness, something to glorify about. So when he comes with this frame of mind, then how is he going to progress? That is why they say you have to break that, you have to bust that. Rum Rahmatullah says that for a long period you've been a rock, and you've seen for yourself that you are not productive, big huge rock, but you are totally non-productive. So for some time now, crush yourself into sand and see how productive you will become. You see all the good sprouting out of you. But in order for the good to sprout out, you have to crush yourself. You crushed yourself, you come into dust. Now, by the grace of Allah, things begin to come out. You become productive. Now, the same thing is explained in different dimensions. Someone will explain it in one way, someone will explain it in a different way. Look at an empty bucket under a tap, right? So as you open the tap, it will make a big noise. But then when that bucket fills up, then do you hear a big noise? The noise subsides. So it's showing that when we have much to learn, we don't know anything yet, make a big noise or something, so make a big noise about it. I know this, make a long discussion, debate, talk about it and impress others. But when you've got it now, it's full, so you don't see the need in entering into discussion, debates and all that. Sometimes just one word, so you may just avoid it, or you may answer the person one word and you can continue. First, person seems to be knowing a lot because he talks so much, talks. So people get misled and they misunderstand, they feel that he knows a lot. Right. But it's just noise that's coming out. What he's achieved, the net value of what he's achieved is very little. Stories are big, but what he's achieved is very little. So in order to progress, then you need to know your mistakes, your weaknesses. Where must I correct myself? How must I correct myself? So that person comes with that frame of mind, then he scores big time. Big time he scores. Gains and he progresses and he progresses. وَلَقَدْ أَرْسَلْنَا إِلَىٰ أُمَمٍ مِّن قَبْلِكَ فَأَخَذْنَاهُمْ بِالْبَأْسَاءِ وَالضَّرَّاءِ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَتَضَرَّعُونَ. The Anbiya alayhi salam had come also to learn, to teach us the same lesson of Tadarru. Tadarru in Urdu translates as gir girana. In English we say humble ourselves. So this feeling of humility and feeling of nothingness must be right to the end. Ya ayyuhan nasu antumul fuqara'u ilallah wallahu huwal ghaniyul hamid. The feeling that you are totally dependent, totally helpless, totally you require Allah Ta'ala's help and assistance. That mustn't be just for a few hours, for a few time, for a few days. It must be a constant feature. constant, continuous. Time totally helpless. I'm useless. I can't do anything. Allah Ta'ala, it's your mercy, your rahmat that will shower me and that will bless me and that will allow me to continue. I got your mercy, I got everything. And minus your mercy, I'm nowhere. I'm nothing. Absolutely nothing. So this must become like a perpetual feature in the person. Must perpetuate you. One is we say that, oh, I'm nothing and I don't know anything. One is to say that. And one is to behave like that. That becomes your nature. You really are convinced that you know nothing. See, if the sun's rays are on the wall, right? And you see the brightness of the wall, the beauty of the wall, with the rays of the sun. But if there the wall says that this is my personal beauty, all the sun has to do is just shift its rays, and then you see it's covered in darkness. So this righteousness or ilm or wisdom or goodness that we see is not our own achievement. It is the glory of Allah Ta'ala that has reflected on us. And for a second, if Allah Ta'ala's glory, His greatness, His ilm, if it turns away, then we are in darkness, total darkness. So as long as we are under that reflection, then we are illuminated. And the moment that has gone, then we are in darkness. They see about a firefly. Someone saw that firefly and said, Jugunu. In Urdu they say Jugunu. Comes, you see the light of it at night. Daytime you see nothing. So someone saw the firefly and he got very thrilled. Hey, where are you, man? So I'm so deeply attached to you. And the day I don't see you, just come up at night and then you disappear. What happens to you? So this firefly says, I'm all the time in the jungles. I'm in the wild all the time. Be it in the day or be it in the night. I'm always there. But what can I do when the day dawns, when the day appears, then I'm overwhelmed in the light of the day. My light has got no significance. I'm finished. So this type of conviction that I'm nothing. أنتم الفقراء إلى الله والله هو الغني الحميد. What is seeing you is just the glory of Allah Ta'ala, the grace of Allah Ta'ala. So this must become like a natural thing, must become a second temperament. I'm nothing. Now this takes a lot of time. I mean, think, you know, I got it. Sometimes you're sitting and you feel, no, I got it. But then after some time, then your behavior shows, no, you don't have it. So when this type of topics are being discussed, at that time you may feel, no, I've got it, I've got it. But it's just the environment that's created that feeling. Out of that environment you're gone. A man is standing before a mirror, right? So the beauty of the person has reflected on the mirror. But the mirror becomes boastful. See me. See who I am. He's boasting over the other mirror. You nothing. You kachara. And I'm so beautiful. So the man has to just move away from the mirror. What happens? Again, there's nothing. So, with the passage of time, as the time passes, so this conviction, this yaqeen must keep progressing, must keep progressing. As Hadi Sahib Rahmatullahi, one of the things that was sort of totally established in him was the same thing, Tawheed Matlab. So in anything he sees, whatever he sees the glory of Allah Ta'ala, the greatness of Allah Ta'ala. So as though he became to such a level, like as though he doesn't exist. You will not say that there's no existence, because the sifat of Allah Ta'ala is wajid, al-wajidul majid. So if there's going to be a wajid, there'll be a موجود. Like if there's a ma'bud, then there's a abid. If there's a wajid, then there must be a mawjud. So if you say there's no mawjud, then you are negating wujud. And negating wujud is wrong. So the one is to negate existence, right? Say there's no existence at all. So that's not right. To say that there's no existence is not right. See, there's people that went to Wahdatul Wujud, so one of them began to say there's no wujud, there's no existence. But then the other one corrected him, that there is the wujud. But the wujud is not a haqiqi wujud, is not the actual existence. Because real existence requires eternity. It must not be subjected to anything. Our existence is subject to the will of Allah Ta'ala. Allah Ta'ala wills, we exist. At the moment Allah Ta'ala's will ends, we end up. So our existence is not real. Like the reflection of the mirror, do you say it's a real, but can you say that there's no reflection? There is a reflection. To say that there's no reflection, that is denying reality. But then to say that it's a real existence, then that is ye kam fahmi ki baat hai. You didn't understand, you didn't see it properly. So you've got an existence, but the existence is not eternal, is not real. It is just the glory of Allah Ta'ala that's reflected, that you became existent. Right? So existence is one sifat. It's one attribute, right? Existence of Allah Ta'ala is one attribute. Right? And that existence is reflecting in you. So you see yourself. See? How you saw yourself? Because of the sifat of Allah Ta'ala of wujud. When he's wujud, then there'll be a mawjud. When he's wajid, or there's wujud, then there'll be a mawjud. Right? If there's an abid, there's going to be a ma'bud. There's going to be a tali, there'll be a matlu. There'll be a qari, there'll be a makuru. Right? Right? So, to condition your mind in that way, to condition your mind that you become absolutely convinced and certain, you're absolutely nothing, you're a non-entity. Now, when you're going to be convinced, then you'll behave like that. But if you're not convinced, then you may put up an act, but the person that is seeing, he knows that this is an act or it's real, right? A person that is drunkard and is wobbling his walk, right? And the person that is imitating a drunkard person, both of them are they the same? Someone you can make out, he's putting up an act, right? And this person is really drunkard. So the person that is really drunkard and the person that is putting up an act, are they identical? Both are different. So the one that has got it, he is different, and the one that is pretending, he is different. Just put him to a small test and you'll see he thinks much of himself, but he's nothing. Now unfortunately this is what happens to us. A few days in i'tikaf, a few days in jamaat, then a few days in madrasa, a few days in khanqa, right? Then the mind swells up, bloats up, I know it. It's like that bucket that is empty and a few drops that come in and is making that noise. But he doesn't know, you just started, don't make noise, keep quiet, you still need to fill up. You have too much noise, what soul got there? Don't make noise, you still need to fill up. You fill up, then you say, it's still like that little tadpole in the pond, right? And the tadpole feels, what a big empire I've got. And ruling the world. He hasn't seen the ocean yet, what he knows. He's seen a small pond, and then in that pond he thinks that he's everything. But when he comes across the ocean, there's no comparison, a tadpole to an ocean, absolutely no, you can't put up a comparison to it. So when you come to reality, you say, I'm nothing, absolutely nothing. So this type of a conviction comes when, see, in the science of hadith, Muhaddithin have put different sharait. That I'm going to prepare this kitab here, and when I'm going to prepare this kitab, then these are the conditions that I'm going to conform to before I enter a hadith into my book. I'm going to enter hadith, but these are the things I'm going to abide by. So I'm going to look at the credentials of the reporter. I'm receiving hadith, for example, from Hazrat Sa'id ibn Musayyab radiyallahu anhu, rahmatullahi alayhi. Okay. So then I'm going to study the credentials of the person. And the credentials, what I will search for, one is I'll check for siqat. How thorough is this person? Is he very thorough? How thorough is he? I'm going to check that out. Right. Then the second thing they will see, Imam Bukhari will see, for example, he'll see kasrat e mulazamat. How did he bond, with his mashayikh? Was there just a casual bonding, now and then he just came and he went away? Or he had a long, prolonged association? Because a person that came once and he went away, once, now and then he just comes and goes, right? He is different to the person that comes for a long duration. When he comes for a long duration, now he understands, I see things in perspective. Before I was just taking bits and pieces, this idea, something here, something here. And I have thought this to be the reality. Just the bits and pieces. But now I'm seeing the true picture, now I see it in perspective. So I didn't understand it in perspective until I studied the story. See? So Imam Bukhari rahmatullahi alayhi, in his wisdom, he says, that person who didn't have kasrat and mulazamat, he didn't associate with his mashayikh, with his elders, prolonged period of time, that I'm not going to take from them. Because I can see now what's going to be the faults. See, now, Imam Bukhari Sahib's kitab is the most authentic, most reliable. So, for the kitab to be the most reliable, you have to put the highest levels of conditions. Standards have to be the highest. We will not say the other kitabs are not as reliable, but you have to have the highest standard. That I want this kitab to be of a higher standard. So then, my mayar, the standard has to be at a very high level, extremely high level. So I need to see the person, how thorough is the person, memory, sound. Number two, that what was the level of association with these seniors? Did he just come and go? Was he casual? Or was there a long drawn, prolonged association? It was a prolonged association, now he understands him very well. And then you see, the fuqaha also have used this type of principles. Like, for example, the fuqaha have got a principle, ijra'e masalihae mursala. Musabra used to say that this is one level that is higher than sunnat muakkada, but less than wajib. Right. So what is the essence of islah? Ijra'e masalihae mursala. What is the essence? The essence is that Nabi Sassam wanted this to happen, right? Wanted to happen, and he was firm about it. But for some reason, he didn't get to do it. Right? But he wanted it to happen. And now, look at two examples, right? The one example is of the second azan in Jummah, right? So in the day of Nabi Sassam, it was just one single azan. Bayn Yadayil Khatib. Just in front of the khatib, there's one azan that is called out. It was the only azan that was called out. And then, in the time of Usman al-Ghani radiallahu anhu, we saw now Islam is spreading. And Medina is growing and growing, right? Like you see a small town, and then it just grows. Like when we came, there's hardly any homes. Then the scrap city, everything started off. Now it's spread so much, right? When I saw Asheville first, very few homes. 1960s, very few homes started off. Now it's sprawling and sprawling. Look, goes around eating one lasagna here, one lasagna here, one lasagna here, 10, 12 lasagna during it simultaneously spread out so much. Right. So Madina Munawwara, at the beginning, was small, so one lasagna was sufficient to see to them, right? Now the thing is, it's a sprawling town, it's spreading out. So if you're just going to be restricting it to one azan, now those people that are living further away, how are they going to get the sound of the azan? How are they going to get to know that it's namaz time? There's no watch at the time. How are they going to get to know? So Usman al-Ghani understood, and he, being very closely associated, he understood the mansha of Nabi Sallam. He understood what Nabi Sallam wants, right? Though, if you look at it in retrospect, right, Abu Huraira is a greater reporter of hadith. Right? He's reported some 3,000 some odd, right? So he's about the greatest reporter of hadith. But then, the one that understood Nabi Sallam with his Khulafai Rashidin, like nobody understood them. Like nobody understood, because they were always around. They've seen now what's going on here, what's going on. So they understood what Nabi Sallam wants. They, like as though you would say, they had the finger on the pulse. Right. So sometimes they may not say it, but they know it. They understand it. And we do have the confidence in them. So the Usman al-Ghani radiallahu anhu, now we announced that now there will be a second adhan. And all the Sahaba kiram had the confidence in her, Usman al-Ghani radiallahu anhu, they agreed. Consensus. From that moment till now, I don't think there's a masjid, perhaps there may be a Shia masjid, but otherwise, any other masjid, these two are ongoing. Right. Don't you see it? From then till now, nobody contested this. Now what do you call this? You'll say this is Ijra'i Masalihai Mursala. That was an expediency of Nabi Sassan, and those people that were very closely attached, frequented Nabi Sallam all the time, they could understand it, they could pick it up, and others couldn't pick it up. And therefore, there was nobody contested it, nobody challenged it. Started it up, nobody challenged it. Now if you can look at this, then you find several examples of the same type. Then now you look at Taraweeh namaz, right? There's just about one hadith that says that Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam stood up in the last 10 nights, right? About 3 days, perhaps the 23rd, 25th, and the 27th, more or less, stand to correction, right? So these were 3 nights that he stood in congregation, right? So now this hadith is authentic, reliable. Most of the books of hadith has got it. Abu Dawud, Tirmidhi, all got the hadith. Now came to Hazrat Umar al-Faruq radiallahu anhu zamana, and he saw people are performing Taraweeh namaz in pockets. Small group here, small group here, small group there, right? So he says, لو جمعتم على إمام واحد. That I want to put them under one imam. He saw. So you got Ubay ibn Ka'b radiallahu anhu, that is of daluhum qira'atan, right? And perhaps he's got Tamim Dari or someone else to do it for women, etc. So two imams, one here, one that side. One outside the masjid, one inside the masjid. But he got them all with 20 rakats and under a single imam, right? Now again, you understand that Umar radiallahu anhu, the way he understood Nabi Sallam, nobody understood Nabi Sallam, right? Because Nabi Sallam wanted to do this in congregation, but he didn't do certain things. Why he didn't do it? خَشْيَةَ أَن يَفْرُدَ عَلَيْهِمْ, with the fear that it may become faraz. If Nabi Sallam did it again, did it repeatedly, it may become faraz. When it becomes faraz, then perhaps some person cannot do it. When he doesn't do it, then it becomes gunegar. So Nabi Sallam didn't do it for that reason. But now Nabi Sallam has gone, so now that fear also ends up. But then Nabi Sallam wanted it to happen. He wanted it to happen. When he wanted it to happen, Umar understood this. Right. So he instituted this. So nobody contested this. Right. Abu Yusuf rahmatullah alayh, he asked his ustad Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullah alayh, Taraweeh, is it a sunnat? He said yes. And how does it start off? He said, Umar radiallahu anhu started it off. And where did he get it from? So he said, Umar kana muttabi'an la mubtadi'an. Umar radiallahu anhu was a Sunni, wasn't a bidati. Simple translation, he was a Sunni, he wasn't a bidati. Kana muttabi'an la mubtadi'an. He was a Sunni, proper Sunni. He was just following the Sunnah. He wasn't innovating things. But now the strange thing is, now you look into the Arab world, right? There's a big controversy starts off with the Tarawih namaz, right? 8 rakat, someone saying 10 rakat, someone whatever. Right? And the general take now is, what the Arab does is right. Right? Whatever he does is right. So the Indian ruler will say, Damat barakatukum. So now this outdated Indian, Hafizakumullah. Now you look sound like Arab. And that Indian thing, this sounds wrong. Now this is an inferiority. And that Ali is not supposed to be feeling inferiority. When there is recorded evidence for this, then why must you feel inferior? Yes, we will respect the Arab, but it doesn't mean because an Arab did this, therefore he is right, the right is restricted to him. So that's inferior. Because your knowledge is not sound, and because the knowledge is not sound, so when you encounter now, that language overwhelms you. Hey, he got the language now. But one is language, alright. One is understanding. So it doesn't mean a person can't speak so fluently that he doesn't have the understanding. He's got the understanding, but he can't express himself so fluently. So now look at it. Just look at it. Look at both, right? The Adhan and the Tarawih Namaz. So the Adhan, nobody made an issue. Arab or non-Arab. But Tarawih, they definitely made an issue. But both have been started off from the Khulafa Rashideen. Now, what was the reason for the disparity? Azan, you made an issue. Tarawih made an issue. But Azan was no issue. What is the reason? The only reason came to my mind is by Azan mein to kuch karna nahi padta. Azan, you don't know. Tarawih, 20 rakats now. Hey, whole Quran Sharif, 20 rakats. Hey, let's make an issue. So then now, Arab ulama are doing 8 rakats, khalas, let's do it. Hindi, Chindi, what they know about? When this inauguration of the King Saud, you know, when it took place, so Saud King, whoever it was, Abdulaziz or whoever it was at that time, he invited ulama as well. Tiyubun ulama, all ulama he called them. So, he says, no, that to have a parliament, is according to the Sunnah. And whoever read that paper, that the parliament is according to the Sunnah, and then he quoted the hadith, Umar radiallahu anhu, when he was assassinated, then he appointed a 6-member parliament, Shura called it a parliament. That Usman Ghani has Ali, Hazrat Talha, Hazrat Saad, Abdul Rahman ibn Auf, and Hazrat Zubair radiallahu anhu. Right. So a 6-member parliament he had established. Right. So one Indian alim, he got up and said, no, it wasn't a 6-member parliament, it was a 7-member parliament. Now that Arab world really shaken up. Hey, Hindi Chindi came and corrected me. What is Hindi Chindi knows? And he comes to correct me. So anyway, that Arab went and found out from his mother that, I delivered this paper in the parliament, in the presence of the Saud king, and I said it was 6. And one Indian caught up and said, no, it was not 6, it was 7. And furthermore, he says it's in Bukhari Sharif. And when he quoted Bukhari Sharif, that I was silenced for that moment because I didn't remember this. So his mother supported that Indian alim, said, no, that Indian alim thing is right, it is in Bukhari Sharif, in so and so volume, so and so page, more or less, she showed it. That Arab went into such a deep state of depression. In that depression he died. That how was it possible for an Indian to come and correct me? So you have to learn the language, that's important, but more than the language is to understand now what is the mansha, what Nabi Sahib wants, what he wants in this whole thing, whatever we are doing. Is it just the language? If it was just language, then Abu Jahl was also a master of the language. Abu Lahab, if he would have been alive, would have been a doctor in Arabic. Is that the reason? Or is it to understand now what Nabi Sahib wants? What does he want? Now, I don't say that the language is not important. Without the language, you're going to understand. But to make the language the goal is to shift the goalpost. That means the understanding became the secondary thing. وَيُعَلِّمُهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْحِكْمَةِ Hikmah is a different thing and the language is a different thing. So you moved away from the hikmah to the language. Right? You made that the goal. Now there are so many kuffar that can write and know Arabic better than us today. So many of them. But they've got nothing to do with Islam. They're miles away from Islam. No, nothing to do. Absolutely nothing to do with Islam. Look at it. See, we're talking of Faham, right? And we're talking of Ijra'i, Masaliha, and Mursala. There's so much of evidence for this. As Nabi SAW says to Abu Huraira, take the shoe of mine, and whoever says La ilaha illallah, bashirhu bil Jannah. En route, he meets up with Umar radiallahu anhu. Umar radiallahu anhu asks him, what's happening? That's what happened. So I suggest that you don't do this. No, but Nabi SAW had sent me. So Umar radiallahu anhu gave him one shot in the chest. Such a hard shot. Umar must be a really powerful person. One shot on the chest, and he says, فَخَرَرْتُ لِإِسْتِي, I fell down. If you know the actual translation, I fell down on my backside. One shot. So he was a real powerful person. One shot. So now Umar radiallahu anhu, Abu Huraira, going back to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, what happened? You sent me with this, and this man is saying this. So Umar explained that يَتَّكِلُ nas. Now, if people say, no, if they hear that La ilaha illallah is sufficient for Jannat, then they won't leave out Amal. They won't make namaz, tarawih, who's going to do all these things here? So now, we La ilaha, we've got our guarantee, Jannat class. We don't need to do anything else. So Nabi Sallam accepted the suggestion of Umar. So, not that Nabi Sallam didn't know about this, but at that moment, perhaps, the Shana Rahmat of Nabi Sallam was ghalib. You know, the Rahmat was overwhelming Nabi Sallam. Somehow get this people to Jannat. Nabi Sallam knew that this is going to happen. But that moment what happened was that Rahmat of Nabi Sallam was overwhelming. He's overwhelmed, so I need to get these people to Jannat. Somehow them, just get them to Jannat. See. But Umar understood now that this is the mansha of Nabi Sallam, and this is a state of mind that Nabi Sallam is going through. And I need to bring it to his attention. Then when I bring it to his attention, then he will see it and how I'm seeing it. He knows about it. But just that for the moment that Rahmat is overwhelmed. Okay. Now there's so many examples of this now. It's just for a person to think, as you think, you will see these things. Yesterday someone was here and saying there's an issue in some places now that women are forcing themselves into the masjid, right? Alright. Now again, look at the hadith now, but just be relaxed and try and understand. So, amongst the women, I don't think there'll be a person like Aisha that understood Nabi Sallam there won't be a woman that understood Nabi Sallam as Hazrat Aisha had understood. She's always there. If there's a woman that is making a query, and it's something that is intimate, then her Aisha will just pull her aside and explain. And maybe someone will be comfortable with the explanation. So she understood. As young as she was, but she was very understanding, extremely understanding. So her Aisha now says, علم النبي صلى ما أحدثت النساء لمنعهم المساجد كما منعت نساء بني إسرائيل. She knows, right? So she's got the finger on the pulse. And she's got the finger on the pulse, so she's making an announcement. If Nabi only knew what the woman started out now, what they started, you would not allow them to come to the masjid at all. Like how the woman of the Bani Israel was stopped from coming to the masjid. Right? Then Umar radiallahu anhu announced they mustn't come to the masjid. Right? Now look at it in retrospect. Like you're living in a democratic society, right? In a democratic society, and the constitution of South Africa reads gender equality, right? So you are equal. So have you got any right, accordingly, you got any right to stop them from coming to the masjid? No right. Then if you got no right to stop them from the masjid, have you got any right now from them being trustees of the masjid? No right to make them say, all right, I've got an equal right. And in this empowerment movement, in the empowerment movement, there's a male and a female, then a female is preferred, right? So if it comes to a chairman, then it'll be a chairwoman. So you can't say chairwoman, you say chairperson, right? Same thing, comes to the same thing, same, sitting in the same chair, right? It's person, woman, man, everything comes to the same thing. It's a play of words, right? Now in that fight, or that woman says, alright, the Jummah khutbah I will deliver. Now, you're looking at the constitution. Right? Then she says, oh, I'll perform the namaz. Any way you're going to stop this thing? Any way you're going to control it, right? The other hadith is talking about a woman. لا تمنعوا النساء المساجد وليخرجن وهن تفيلات. Don't stop them from the masjid, but they must come out to the masjid in an untidily attire. Untidy. They mustn't be like tidy and posted up. Now I ask you, have you got the authority and the strength to ensure that women come to the masjid in an untidily attire? Have you got the authority, have you got the strength to do it? So what is the simplest thing? By performing your namaz, garja kar namaz padte raho. That is the simplest thing, isn't it? Because you don't have the control, you don't have the authority. Abu Huraira radiallahu anhu comes across a woman, and this woman has come out of the house and she's perfumed herself, right? But that's a general tendency of women. When they're coming out, they must doll themselves. Yeah. Whether they are 90 years of age or 20 years, they must doll themselves. Shampoo, everything, they must do that and then come out. Allah bakun raham farmaya. So Abu Huraira says to this woman, Ya Amat al Jabbar. Oh, slave of the mighty, right? Slave of the mighty. What's wrong with you? You come out just because you want to come out, you came out of your home, therefore you perfumed yourself. And then he quoted the hadith that a woman that comes out like this, in this state, then she's like a zaniya, an adulteress. Go and have a ghusl. Go and have a ghusl, and then if you want to come, you come back. But now I ask you, have you got that power and that clout like Abu Huraira had? Say, for example, one advocate woman now, she's coming to the masjid. Just for example. Can you tell her this much? Have you got the heart to say it? So what is the simplest thing under the circumstance? By you stay in the house. But Aisha understood the whole thing. But now, the person today now says, oh, I got this hadith here, that hadith, that hadith. But do you have the clout? Do you have the authority? Do you have the strength to bring about the control, to bring about the step of administering? Do you have it? So admit I don't have that. You have no control. In your namaz, one woman comes and stand next to you. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You can't stop. And you can't stand her. You can't stop her and you can't stand her. What are you going to do? Both ways, see. In Medina Munawwara there is some control, at least women are separate, right? So there is some control. In Makkah Mukarramah, in a busy time, then can you control it?
you control, you leave, you chase that girl from one side, right? The other one will come that side. In a busy people, no control. Then you go into the second self, the front self, someone else comes. If they're not on your side, then they'll be in front of you. How are you going to control it? Not going to be able to control it. So this hadith of Aisha says, "Mana ahunna al masajid." We should have stopped them because of ijra'i masalihe mursala. She understood. Understanding of this, it was not just the language, the understanding, that foresight. She had that foresight, or this will happen. Are they allowed it? Somewhere, I won't say where, in Saudi Arabia, they allowed it. And then you had a situation, there was zina in the masjid. Report now, I don't say now the way it happened and how it happened, but it happened, exactly it happened. In some place in South Africa, they're allowing it. And also, one person came and said, I went there for, I had some work, I went there, I came back. Outside the masjid, men and women, boys and girls, are talking like how they talk in a park or in university. Free, they'll talk casually. They'll just talk like that. Now, is this something that is going within the ethos of a masjid? And do you have the strength, the clout to control this thing, administer this? So the right thing, but listen to these people here. Now, everybody wants to do his independent study, I understood it, nobody else understood it. Then a situation comes up, and then now he's lost. Now, what do I do now? By the simple things, akabir ka tariqa. It's the style of your elders, by go with it, you won't get lost. But you want to start off something here, tomorrow you'll have to reverse that thing. You start it off, then you don't have to reverse it. You know, you'll be lost, you'll be confused, confounded. How must I reverse this, the whole thing? I started the thing clever thing. Now, correct that thing, can you correct that thing? Can't correct it, see, I can't correct it. I don't have control. Why must you act like a brave person, and then when you find a problem, and then say, no, I can't control, I can't manage the thing. It's carrying on so smoothly, why must you do this? See? So this way of our kabir. Now, when this free thinking is going to come up, right, then in a few years, then there will be no need to follow an imam, free thinking. Well, this hadith says this, that hadith says this. Now to make that person understand, streamline him, correct him, these are the procedures. Usme zamana lagta hai. It takes a lot of time to understand, make the person understand why we reason like this, how should we reason, and if you don't reason here, what will be the problems, what are the complications, what will happen. So for the person to understand one thing, one issue, it will take a lot of time. But there is a method that came, right? It came and is flowing well. So move with that. Don't bring complications. Now there is a hadith to explain this as well. See, in the time of Usman al-Ghani, some reports came to him. Then now Islam has spread as far as Azerbaijan, somewhere in Russia, right? In that places. So one person is reciting the Quran Sharif in one dialect, and the other person called the Quran Sharif written in another dialect. So when this is written one dialect, he's written in a different dialect. So he says yours is wrong, and he says yours is wrong. Then the argument is growing up. When the argument is growing, building up, say you are a kafir. He says you are a kafir. So Usman Ghani sees khilafat, and this thing comes to him. So he says everything, stop everything. Just one dialect, leave the Quraysh. So you write the Quran Sharif in that dialect only, right? I ask you, was it sunnah? Anyway, is it established that you must stop everything else? Whereas the sunnah is that unzila hadha al-Quranu ala sab'ati ahrufin. Permission was given from Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Usman is stopping the writing of the Quran Sharif in any other dialect, just one dialect. Now, why did he do that? Whereas there is hadith supporting the recitation of the Quran, the recitation and the writing of the Quran Sharif in different dialects. Usman is restricting it to one. So I ask you, why did he do that? Because his understanding was different, at a different level. He understands now. Now you're not going to control this. Before it was allowed, because there was a need for it. The ease was in allowing and giving this accommodation, giving this room, right? That was the need at that time. Allowing it, giving that accommodation, because people are coming from different backgrounds. He's Huzail, he's there, right? Qabila is there, right? He's reading in a different dialect. Now you're forcing him to read in a different dialect. He can't manage it. Like somebody saying million, another person saying million. They say million, but I can't say that thing. It says, Harry, eat an amber on his head. That hair is not coming out of his mouth. You can't blame the person. He can't just say that. He can't say it. You're forcing him. So at that time, the permission was the ease, right? That was the ease. Now moving into time, now restricting was the better thing. That time, giving the allowance was the better thing. Now restricting it was the better thing. As Maharaja understood it. So now, every other dialect, either he burnt everything, or he burnt out. Just one. I'm going to write this, and this is going to be distributed in the entire Islamic Khilafat. So Khuda ke liye, samajh lo, ye akabir ka tariqa is the tariqa that is guaranteed and secured. And these five initiated ones is flawed, and you find the problems afterwards. People are inventing, no, I studied this, I said, well, this is our akabir, or Buzugan, I think they started something, and they have got evidence to show that there was no problems, see, for over the 300-400, say, hundreds of years that they were in India, there was no problems. Now you're going to start something new, and then you are going to be there to control it, see that thing is controlled. Who's going to control it then? Allah Bakhtofi Nasib.